With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Business of Craft Beer podcast, recorded live from the University of Vermont's Continuing and Distance Education Department with your host, Greg Dunkley. Whether you're looking to break into the craft beer industry or start your own brewery, this podcast is for you. Each week, we will discuss all aspects of the craft beer industry from sales, operations, marketing, trends, and analysis with industry experts and thought leaders. If you'd like to be part of the show, please call 929-477-1757. And now here's your host, Greg Dunkley.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Greg Dunkling. You're listening to the Business of Craft Beer Blog Talk Radio Show, and we're coming live from the campus of the University of Vermont in Burlington, Vermont. We've all heard of co-ops, and many of us have at least one in our community. Today's podcast examines how the co-op model is being applied to craft beer. I'm delighted to have two guests with experience in running beer co-ops. Sean Becker, board president of Flying Bike Co-op from Seattle, Washington, and Andy Martinek, a brewer at Black Star Co-op Pub and Brewery based in Austin, Texas. Starting a brewery is, of course, a capital-intensive business, even for the smallest commercially viable model. Cooperative models offer a creative solution, and although certainly not the right solution for everyone, this has proven to be a viable business model for some communities. In today's podcast, we'll explore how brewery cooperatives are formed, the management structure of these enterprises. A co-op refers to an organization that is owned by its members rather than outside shareholders. Is this an option for your community? Would this be a financial model that would help you fulfill your dream of opening a brewery? What are the limitations and challenges? So let's discuss these and other questions. Welcome, Sean and Andy.
Morning, Greg.
Thank you.
Morning.
So let's start with you, Andy. Black Star Co-op Pub and Brewery has the special distinction of being the world's first cooperatively owned brew pub. Tell us your story, and when did you get started and why?
Awesome. So I was not around when Black Star was initially created, but it was created in 2006. A group of folks got together in a Austin backyard and over beers kind of talked about creating this local community-focused bar that eventually transformed into a brew pub that's not only brewed their own beer but served awesome locally sourced pub fare. And it just kind of snowballed from there into opening their doors in 2010, and here we still are.
So I understand that you have a members assembly and a board of directors. Could you describe their roles?
Sure. So we are a kind of a unique cooperative model. We are a consumer co-op, but we have member owners. So the members assembly consists of member owners who have purchased a share of the cooperative. We currently have about 3,500 member owners, and their role is to, you know, they have one vote for the board of directors, and then they also are, you know, they come into the pub, they eat, they drink, and they are invited to special events and things of that nature. And so their vote for the board of directors essentially will elect one of our nine board of directors that kind of oversees us as a business and kind of governs us, make sure that we stick to our end policies and all the values that we set out to uphold when we started this company.
Uh-huh. Well, let's bring in Sean from Flying Bike Co-op in Seattle, Washington. When did you start and who drove the creation of Flying Bike? Tell us, I'm particularly interested in about the Thirsty 300.
Yeah, so Flying Bike started in 2010. There was a guy by the name of Jeff Hicks, our original founder, who reached out to the community saying, hey, I've got this idea. I want to start this co-op brewery. And this is right, you know, and when things are getting kind of heating up in Seattle with the beer scene. So a bunch of people got together. We sat down. He walked through, kind of explained what a co-op brewery was, and invited those folks to stick around and kind of help him build this thing. And so a group of us started meeting every Saturday, and we formed what we call our steering committee, and slowly just kind of moved the idea forward. Mm-hmm. When we incorporated in 2011 and opened up our membership, we wanted to, you know, we really had no idea what kind of reception we were going to get from the community, and so we started this idea of the Thirsty 300. We, you know, put it out there and said, hey, our first goal, our initial goal, is to get to 300 members, and those 300 members would kind of have a special place in the history of Flying Bike as those original people who jumped on this idea, you know, with little more than just sort of this dream, right? And so we had no idea what kind of reception, and within about a week and a half, 2 weeks, we had hit that 300 mark. It went like gangbusters. People were really excited about it.
Wow. How many members do you have out today?
We currently have, I believe it's 1,773 members.
Okay. So I wanted to explore with you what a cooperative brewery looks like in terms of membership, and what does a membership in a brewery, co-op brewery, get you? Either one of you?
Sure. Well, specifically the Black Star, becoming a member owner it's a one-time payment of $150 for one share of the cooperative. It gets you, like I mentioned earlier, a vote for the board of directors. You get a member owner discount once a week. It's on Tuesdays. It's our pint night. It reduces house beer prices significantly, and you also get invited to, you know, special events, and you receive the newsletter that keeps you kind of abreast of all the new information in the co-op.
Okay.
Yeah, and for Flying Bike, you know, very similar. We have our annual meeting where our members vote in our board of directors. We turn over three board positions each year. They also vote on, you know, larger issues that the board brings to them for decision-making around the brewery. What makes Flying Bike a little bit different than a lot of the co-ops is we ask our members to be a little bit more involved in terms of the beers that actually get produced. We have frequent member homebrew competitions where we ask our members to brew beer to a particular style or within certain ramifications, whether it's ingredients or yeast or whatever. And then we have other members that come in that will actually judge that beer, and then the winning beer goes on to be brewed and served in the tasting room. And so not all of our beers are member beers, but there's sort of that pro-am sort of aspect where members are kind of involved in that aspect.
Yeah, so I'm curious if the two of you have full-time brewing staff, production staff, is it a combination of staff plus members?
For Flying Bike,
go ahead.
Sorry, go on, Andy.
No, you're good. Go ahead, man.
All right. So for Flying Bike, we have a full-time head brewer and a part-time assistant brewer. Due to legal reasons, it's very difficult to have members actually acting as our brewing staff. We do try to bring them in to be involved in a brew day if they win our competitions. Recently we did the Pink Boots Big Brew Day, where we brought in some of our members to be involved. But in terms of sort of ongoing brewing staff, for the most part, it's full time.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's very similar to that here at Black Star. We, like Sean mentioned, it can be kind of a legal gray area and kind of a liability to have people that aren't employed by you in the brewery. But yeah, it's nice to have member owners in if they do win like a homebrew competition to kind of see the brewing process.
So, Andy, first, do you use tasting panels where members and brewers have input into creating beers that that the members want, or how do you go about sort of deciding how what to produce and the style of beers to produce, et cetera?
Fortunately for me and my coworker, we have almost 100% creative freedom to brew what we feel is acceptable here at Black Star. We have done in the past member owner homebrew competitions. Unfortunately, in the state of Texas, it is actually illegal to transport homebrew in a personal vehicle and actually to possess it at a manufacturing facility. So it's kind of one of those gray areas where it can get a little tricky. But we do occasionally have member owners in to do a like you mentioned, a tasting panel to pick some ingredients and go over. We have two member owner designed beers. One actually won a bronze medal at GABF in 2013. Mm. So that was kudos to the member owners for picking some good ingredients.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Sean?
So for us, our brewer has for the most part control over what ends up coming out of our taps. I mean, we kind of put that responsibility on him and give him the leeway to make the right decisions for the beer. But we do bring our members in to sort of be involved in that process. Another piece that we do is we have a monthly brewer's table where we invite members to come in, sit down with our brewer, and really he just kind of talks about what's going on, you know, what beers are coming up, what things are in the fermenters. Sometimes they get some sneak peek sort of special tastes, and then kind of gets that feedback from them.
Okay. you mentioned before the membership fee to become a member. What it sounds to like is that you're not generating a lot of startup capital through those membership fees. So let's talk a little bit about how co-ops are typically funded. Are there models for financing a cooperative brewery that are used fairly consistently across all co-ops? Are there limitations or challenges that you've experienced in financing the launch and operation of your co-op? Andy?
So when we started getting financing for Black Star, we, you know, raised capital through member investments. So if you were a member of the cooperative, you had purchased a share of the cooperative, you were then able to buy member investment shares, which would, you could buy any number, but you still only had one vote for the board of directors. Therefore, the power wasn't skewed to any one member owner. So it was still democratically run that way. But we did secure a significant portion of our startup capital from member investment shares.
Okay.
Yeah, and for Flying Bike, it's basically the same. You know, with a co-op brewery, you know, bank loans, banks are looking for a personal guarantor or a group of personal guarantors. And as a democratically run organization with a nine-person board of directors, it's very difficult for, you know, any one or couple of people to sort of put their names on the line when they're not fully in control of what's going on. And so for us, we did the same thing. As a member, we gave our members the opportunity to purchase preferred shares, and that's how we raised 100% of our capital. And you're absolutely right. The membership dues, the lifetime dues that folks pay, you know, when you're starting up as a cooperative, really that just keeps you going until you're able to get enough interest, enough members to really kick off that investment campaign. It's really not going to ever be enough to be able to help you open.
Right. Yeah. So the we've seen it in our community, a couple of neighboring communities, food co-ops that have gone through tremendous growth. They've decided to expand either on their current site or to add additional sites. Have you, or do you know of other cooperative breweries that have sort of gone through that expansion phase, and how do they go about, you know, making a decision? I guess more than financing, just how do you make a decision whether to go forward with an expansion or to remain relatively small?
That's a really good question. We at Blackstar have had talks about expansion since, you know, the second year of being open. And that was initially the talks started and things started moving relatively quickly. We, you know, polled our member owners to see, hey, what are y'all interested in seeing from Blackstar? And you know, kind of unanimously, everybody was like, well, we want to see a location that is more, you know, close to where we live. So like South Austin or East Austin. So talks started early on, but the trigger never really got pulled. So it moves a little bit slower in a co-op since there are so many voices, for lack of a better term. There's a lot of input, which is great, but it doesn't allow that pulling of the trigger, so to speak, to happen as quickly as it would in another business. But yeah, I think it's just kind of trying to see what best suits your member owners' needs. And, mm-hmm. and we, you know, are still relatively small brew pub. You know, we produce less than 700 barrels of beer a year. So we haven't grown tremendously. But yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah. Okay. How about you, Sean?
Yeah. And I think that, it's similar to any brewery that would be in sort of the same position, plus that factor of having all of those voices, as Andy mentioned. So, you know, speed of making sort of leaps or risks, it's definitely a bit slower because you've got a lot more people to answer to, and as a board, kind of arriving at that choice. But I think that, you know, for new businesses, early businesses, breweries, whatever you are, you know, picking those right times to sort of invest and expand. You know, that's hard no matter what business you're in. And I think as a co-op brewery, we need to try to find those opportunities and jump on them when we can. But as we talked about before, you know, the financing model is a little bit different and it's a little bit more difficult. You know, it's easier once you have some equipment to put on the line, but that only goes so far. So if you're talking about, you know, doing a full, you know, another location, we're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not more, in capital to be able to make that happen. But at the same time, we've had a lot of our members come to us and ask us if we've thought about doing these things, and you know, they've expressed willingness to sort of double down and increase their investment in the co-op. And so it's definitely something that we'll be continuing to explore. You know, for us, we need to get to a point where we're just in a sort of solid place in our current location. But, you know, as Andy mentioned, I think we're kind of in the same boat. We've talked about it. We have dreams of having more locations. Our members would love to have more access to, you know, their brewery's beer closer to where they live.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You both are processes, and I think that seems to be the standard way that cooperative breweries operate. Is that true?
I'm sorry, yeah, you kind of broke up there. I didn't hear that, the first part of the question.
Yeah, are cooperative breweries typically brew pubs, restaurants, food plus beer, as opposed to microbreweries?
I think the most recent wave of cooperative breweries, I would say, for the most part, are brew pubs. I always say, I think I know all the names of the co-op breweries, but it seems like a new one opens up every couple months. But I think that's the case. Sean, do you have any better perspective on that?
It seems to be a definitely a mix. So we're sort of a pseudo brew pub in that we don't actually have our own kitchen, but we've partnered with local restaurants to bring in food. We actually have a direct partnership with a place next door where folks can order from us and they'll bring the food over. And then there's, I visited Fair State Brewing in Minneapolis. They don't have food, last I checked. So I think that there is definitely a mix. But, you know, for me personally, I think that food is a really important part of the beer drinking experience. I think that, you know, if someone's going to hang out for a while, food needs to be a component to that. It's very difficult for someone to stick around and, you know, have more than two pints or so unless it's, you know, late at night or something. But in any case, I think that it's sort of part of that experience. So.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just take a moment to for our sponsor. If you've dreamed about opening your own brewery or are looking for a career change into craft beer, our online certificate program at the University of Vermont offers industry-specific knowledge to make this possible. Your instructors are craft beer experts from across the United States and Canada. The University of Vermont's Business of Craft Beer program was developed for those who specifically want to learn about the business side of this exciting industry. For further details, you can check our Facebook page at UVM Business of Craft Beer. This podcast is also, if you're listening, it's on our website, on our Facebook page, and also on LinkedIn. I want to get back to sort of the question of today's market and how it impacts cooperative breweries. There's much discussion today about the importance of local markets for craft breweries in general. If you can gain a strong local following, then a brewery can not only survive in this competitive environment, but also thrive. A cooperative brewery certainly seems to speak to the importance of a local market. How do you see this playing out in your communities, and can co-op breweries compete in competitive markets? Sean?
I think, yes, they definitely can compete. it's a little bit different to some extent. You know, if you see a beer on the shelf next to, you know, 5 million other beers, you know, someone's going to look at that and go, oh, that's a co-op beer. You know, unless they have prior knowledge of that particular brewery, that's going to be a bit difficult. But, you know, when it comes to local markets, co-ops are all about community and bringing people together, you know, and that's something that we're constantly trying to figure out how to foster in our tasting room. And we definitely have a lot of folks that are hyper-local. We have customers, we have several regulars that live across the street. We have people who walk there, ride their bikes, you know, and just based on that alone, you know, it's obvious that our core market is very much local. You could think of it as a bullseye, where we're at the center, and you know, the farther you get out, the fewer of our sort of regular customers are. But you know, especially in our market in Seattle, where you've got lots and lots of breweries close by. I mean, we're located right next door to another brewery. We are within 20 blocks of two other breweries. You know, people like to go to the brewery. They like to see where it comes from. They like to, you know, if they can, catch a glimpse of the brewer or talk to the brewer. You know, and so I think that's something that as we kind of see where the industry is going, where the market's going, you know, in terms of Seattle, we've got a lot of breweries. And so competing is somewhat difficult, you know, trying to sort of rise above that so that people actually notice you, they know about you, they seek out your beer, whether it's on tap somewhere else or they come into the brew pub, or not brew pub, but the tasting room in our case. You know, I think that's it's no different with a co-op than anything else. We have a bit more of a story to tell, and sometimes that makes it easier to pull people in. Sometimes it makes it more difficult because you kind of have to make that story succinct and compelling so that someone actually wants to hear more, or they want to actually pull their wallet out or drive to the tasting room. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely a question that we continue to work with and talk about, you know, every day, really.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback on that.
Yeah.
A very real scenario that we actually just went through is like Sean was mentioning, it is extremely competitive, especially, you know, in Seattle and Austin as well. They're, you know, getting close to 50 breweries here in Austin, and it's quite a few. So competition is definitely up. And at the beginning of this year, we saw a kind of a huge dip in sales. And so we were in this like financial kind of shaky area for Blackstar. And so we, on the one hand, competition is obvious and it affects all of us. And Blackstar almost even more so because of our model. We pay our workers a fair living wage. We provide dental, healthcare, paid time off, discounts to our employees. So we compensate people very, very competitively. And so when we take a hit in sales, it's not like another restaurant where you pay somebody $2.13 an hour and you can, kind of trim your staff and go down to bare bones. It's a little bit harder for us. On the other hand, though, as a cooperative brew pub, we send a letter out to our member owners kind of, asking for their help, saying, hey, we're in this weird financial position. We could use some help right now. Please come out and support your brew pub. And it was just, we had the most amazing reception from our member owners, and it actually ended up getting leaked online, and the entire community of Austin kind of came out and supported us. But we had the opportunity to reach out to our, 3,500 plus member owners and say, hey, we're struggling. We're in a hard time right now. Could you please come out and, support your local brew pub? And it just, it got the message immediately to the people who are genuinely invested in this business. So I think we have an advantage in that respect that we can draw from this big pool of people who at one point in their life said, hey, I'm going to support this brew pub. This will be my brew pub. And I think that's definitely an advantage that we have.
Yeah. In a podcast a few weeks ago, we discussed the growing importance of tap rooms at most breweries. In many communities, these breweries offer the feel of a British pub or a neighborhood community center, even a place where friends meet. And that seems to describe precisely what you folks are doing with cooperative breweries.
Right. Yeah. Tap rooms are definitely a huge part of our business. I mean, 99% of the beer that we make gets sold through our taps. That was the model that we set out to make. Luckily, in 2013, Texas had some pretty big law changes that allowed us to distribute beer as a brew pub, which we weren't able to do in the past. But realistically, we want to sell all of our beer through our taps because, one, it's higher margin, but two, it's, you experience the beer at the place where it was created. It's as fresh as possible. You get the knowledge from the servers and the ambiance of the brew pub itself. So I think that's definitely a very important thing for breweries to do.
In addition to local, with so many mergers and acquisitions in craft, the issue of remaining independent has taken on a meaning perhaps like never before. Co-ops are by definition independent. Do you see the number of cooperative breweries growing in the future? And do you see a link to this larger industry trend towards consolidation, perhaps as a counter trend?
I'll take that one, or at least start. Definitely been seeing more co-op breweries opening. I mean, there's certainly a trend there where I think people are number one, just recognizing and finding the fact that the co-ops exist and that's it's a viable business model. And then number two, just, like I think a lot of co-ops start, you've got some folks who are thinking, man, I would love to own a brewery, be involved in it, but I can't do it alone, whether it's financial or, they don't have the skills or, they just want to build a community and do it together. In terms of, you're right, co-ops are independent. I don't think they're going to be sold to Anheuser-Busch. does that buck the trend? I think it's not a lot. It's not terribly different from other small breweries in our community. I know breweries that would, it's an interesting question. It's a really big question, actually, the more I think about it.
But it's interesting how today it's almost a challenge to know if the brand you bought last month is independent or owned by another larger brewery through acquisition. And it just, you know, in conversations I have with people who are, you know, avid craft consumers, they're getting a little confused as to who owns whom. And you don't have that question when it's your local brewery and you know the people who are producing it. And it's your favorite watering hole. You know, there's no question about that. And so I just wonder long term if the mergers continue, whether people who are really devoted to local independent craft breweries aren't going to migrate even a little more back home to their local trusted producer of good beer.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And as Sean mentioned earlier, cooperatives by nature are very community oriented. And so I would love to see that kind of, you know, going back to the days where, you know, every town has a brewery, every town has a bread shop, every town has a butcher, and you go and you patronize those places and you support the brewery that's 30 feet away as opposed to buying a beer that's produced 10 states away. So yeah, I think that's definitely a trend that we've seen. It's not necessarily taking a hold as much currently, but I think that, you know, Austin's a very local supporting town anyways, but I think, yeah, it'll probably be hyper-local supportive, if that makes sense, as these acquisitions become more and more frequent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when it comes to tap rooms, you know, folks supporting their local tap rooms, I think that does happen a lot in cities like Seattle and Austin and other places around. I think the sort of the next question there in my head, or at least where I go, is sort of that packaged product. You go and you kind of ask yourself that question. I'm standing there in my local beer shop or my local grocery store, and I'm looking at, you know, 100 different beer options, and I'm thinking, you know, who owns these guys? You know, by doing this, who am I supporting? You know, does that mean that co-op breweries, you know, when they package, if they package, do they, you know, is that how they kind of differentiate themselves and say, hey, we're co-op, you know, always independent? You know, should co-op breweries strive to do, you know, to do packaging where they wouldn't necessarily, you know, that wouldn't necessarily fall into the original plan? You know, we've talked about packaging, whether, you know, we're going to end up in the local grocery store anytime soon. I don't know, but
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, it's
definitely
a
differentiator.
I had a friend not long ago ask me the question, and I won't name the brewery, but a large national craft brand, and asked the question, are they craft? You know, they're so big. Are they really craft beer? And it certainly sparked a debate as to what that definition means. And we carried on that discussion with a well-known person in the industry in Washington, D.C. at one of the breweries. And we just, you know, had a long conversation about what it all means. You know, Rate Beer's Joseph Tucker was quoted as saying it's possible for craft breweries to stop having that small town feel and become too large for their own good, especially becoming big beer themselves. So it's not only about mergers and acquisitions. It can be about breweries that possibly are just growing, become national brands. And at what point do they cross the threshold? And you know, setting aside the definition of craft, they sort of lose that small town feel, which you guys are really represent.
Yeah, that's an extremely complicated issue. In my opinion, I get sucked into these debates and conversations that last hours, and it's very, it can be very subjective.
Yeah.
You know, it's what like you said, what defines a craft brewery? Well, there's a legal definition of it, you know, as far as production's concerned. But you, like you said, if somebody gets bigger than what they what somebody views them as a craft brewery, then yeah, who's to say? You know, you always go back to the large brewers that use adjuncts in their beers and are using you know, sugar substitutes basically to lower the price of the beer, but also lower the flavor and sweetness of the final product. But is that what makes them not craft beer? I mean, we just brewed an adjunct cream ale, which we used rice in because it's a, you know, it's a fun ingredient, and the final beer was, you know, supposed to be super dry and pretty close to water and extremely drinkable. So is that not craft? It's a real tough question, because you can you can have your own views on what it is, and it could be 1,000 barrels a year, it could be 10,000 barrels a year, or it could be, you know, do you focus 50% of your budget to marketing?
Yeah, well, full disclosure, my argument was that it's a state of mind. It's are you committed to experimentation and creativity in the brewing? And it doesn't matter really how large you are. But, you know, one could argue the other side of that easily, too.
Right.
We have a caller. I'd like to bring them in and see if they have a question. 1 second. Go ahead. Where are you from and what's your name? Hello? I guess they don't have a question. Well, I'd like to just give you a moment. Are there any additional things that you would like to address that we have not covered today about the cooperative breweries? Andy?
I think it's important to note that, you know, we are businesses like any other business. It's just what kind of makes us unique is that, one, we're owned by many people as opposed to just a handful, which legally speaking can be more of a headache than we want. Trying to get the government to understand what a cooperative is always fun. But I think the big takeaway from seeing a cooperative brewery or any business for that matter is the values that business holds. You know, what does that business truly value? And for us, it's, you know, it's worker treatment. It's making sure that we provide a really awesome workplace for people that work here that allows anybody to become more educated and a better worker and has as many opportunities as they can, and also have for community involvement and locally sourced awesome food and beer. I think that's, you know, kind of our mission at Black Star, and I think take a look at any of the values of any of the cooperatives around you and just kind of say, hey, is that something that I support too? And if it is, you know, go support your cooperative brewery.
Yeah, great. Sean, I'll give you the last word.
Well, I think that if I wanted anyone to sort of take things away from this conversation or any conversation about cooperatives, is that, you know, cooperative breweries is a newer business model. It's something that can work, and you know, I think that it's especially in you know, when it comes to communities that have, you know, like ours, where we have hops from Yakima, we have malts from Skagit Valley. You know, we can really be hyper-local in terms of folks who are being a part of the brewery, buying our beer, coming to our tasting room. But we can also be involved in that same community when it comes to sourcing our ingredients. You know, there's, you know, the original cooperatives really came out of farming and produce and such. So, you know, there's a lot of cooperatives that sort of happen on the raw ingredient side that, you know, I think is a really great opportunity for not only co-op breweries but all breweries to sort of take advantage of, but especially for co-op breweries being able to, you know, cooperate and collaborate with other businesses in the area that are focused on making the right decisions for not only the bottom line, but for their local community and environment.
Well, great. I really want to thank Sean and Andy for joining us this afternoon. Unfortunately, we're out of time. And again, Sean Becker, Board President of Flying Bike Co-op from Seattle, Washington, and Andy Martinick from Brewer at Black Star Co-op and Brewery in Austin, Texas. Great conversation today. I wanted to just mention that we will have an upcoming podcast looking at the ESOP employer-owned brewery model. A number of breweries are going in that direction. Harpoon, obviously, a few years ago, recently Switchback Brewery here in Vermont announced their plans to switch to an employee-owned model. So we look forward to having that conversation as well as just another alternative model for managing and financing and running breweries. But until then, wish everyone to have a great afternoon. And don't forget, please visit your local breweries. Again, Andy and Sean, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg. Greg.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.